Was there any moments of respite during your downward spiral through like anxiety and depression and stuff?
Sleep, definitely sleep. I looked forward to going to sleep at night.
Yeah.
And I think you can relate to this, that few seconds when you wake up and you
Yeah.
literally can't remember any problems or anxious thoughts or anything.
So there's no acknowledgement of any problems at that split second.
Yeah.
And it's only like normally it's like 2-3 seconds.
Yeah, literally that, and you sort of, you've been asleep, obviously, you wake up peaceful and then it
Yeah.
just crashes down on you.
Yeah, you're suddenly aware and acknowledge the problems that you've got,
Yeah.
and it's just like a car crash of emotions. It's really strange because, yeah, I was exactly the same in the sense that I look forward to going to sleep, and if I wasn't tired, I was more anxious because I
Yeah.
wanted to be able just to fall straight to sleep. And you're so right in saying, like, when you wake up, because you're still in that like dreamlike state, there's no problems or issues, and then it's literally, well, for me anyway, personally, I refused to open my eyes, and then when I did open my eyes, I was aware of my surroundings, where I was and how I was feeling. Yeah, so.
I was lucky actually that I didn't have too much like insomnia. I know
Yeah.
people suffer badly with that, don't
Yeah,
they?
massively.
I used to hate waking up in the middle of the night because I knew that would be a bad night then.
Yeah, because then your sleeping pattern's been interrupted, and then you're suddenly aware again of where you are and how you're feeling. It's interesting, that is.
How did the first episode go?
So, the response was amazing, to be honest, from the first episode.
I saw quite a bit on social media and that.
Yeah,
It looked like you got some nice comments.
it was it was, yeah, it was overwhelming. It was strange because I got the response I was hoping for, but in a sad way, I wasn't hoping for it. So a lot of people reached out, like explaining problems and stuff. And although it was like, sad to hear,
Yeah.
it's nice that they was able to speak about it. So that's the idea of this like platform, is to hopefully give people, not necessarily give people a voice, but like to relate to it. But a lot of people through the messages and stuff was explaining how like open, honest and raw it was. And I was saying the other day, it's weird because I don't see it as being very raw or honest, because I lived it and I was going through those emotions day in, day out. My story didn't seem that like different, or
Because that's your normal.
yeah, because it was normalized from me experiencing it, you see. So
Yeah.
like I can still tell people stuff now and they'll be completely shocked. But I think that might, go hand in hand why people maybe worry about talking about it, because you experience that way of thinking and that thought process or that habit for so long, and because it normalizes it, I think people worry then their story or problem or issue isn't that big, so they're reluctant to go talk to someone about it.
Yeah, I mean, before you speak out about it, you feel like you're the only person in the world going through that.
Exactly, yeah. And yeah, and to be fair, I just thought if I was as brutal as honest as possible, hopefully then people can relate to it, and it appears some people have, even though that's unfortunate. But yeah, it's just a weird one, like I said. Like I just didn't think it was that bad. And I think when you're going through depression and anxiety as well, you always think in your head other people have got it worse.
Yeah.
You always think like, why am I feeling like this? I shouldn't. You've essentially, I had a good job. I was in a happy relationship, like when this all started. I had everything which for a normal person should suffice to a happy life.
Yeah,
And
I can relate totally to that.
yeah, and but it wasn't all happy, it wasn't all roses and stuff like that. So, and you always think, oh, there's been people, might have been abused as a child or have like been living on the street. And for me, because I had everything at that point, and I still do to an extent, but because I thought I had everything, I didn't think I had any rhyme or reason or right to feel like I did.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started feeling low, I was the same as you. I was searching and searching and searching for a reason why I felt like that. And
Yeah.
I'd look back to my childhood and think, well, my childhood was great. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
school was great. I've got a good job. I'm in a happy relationship. Like, why am I feeling like this?
Yeah.
I couldn't just accept it.
No, and I think a lot of people look for a quick fix. But I do think the one main thing with mental health is, and what people need to look at and address, is you've kind of got to be selfish to deal with it. in the sense that you've got to put yourself first. So like, don't look at other people's lives. Don't look at what triggers they've had or what affects them.
Yeah.
Because it can just make yours seem minuscule in, like, in comparison. You've actually got to think like, no, I am feeling like this and I've got to put myself first, and you've got to do what you need to do. Unfortunately for me, for a long period of time, for me to, you know, escape that, it was alcohol. But now I know, and I'm coming to terms with talking to people and stuff like that. Today's podcast, episode 2, Breaking the Habit, I'm joined with my good friend, Jonathan Potts.
Jonathan, you've gone for.
Yeah, Jonathan, yeah. So I just thought it's got to be a bit, you know, formal. So. And we've known each other now for 25, 26 years.
Yeah, it's got to be that long, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, like year 2 at primary, I think I rocked up and rocked your world.
With a little mushroom blonde haircut.
Yeah, a little bowl cut. Probably that was caused a lot, to be fair. The embarrassment of that. Like I say, we've known each other for a long, long time, and we've kind of touched base. We went kind of quiet for a period of time, didn't we? And we touched bases earlier this year, but we went to the same university together and stuff like that, didn't we? We weren't out drinking and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we'd, like you say, we went quiet, but then, say, even if we saw each other once every 6 months, it's exactly the same every time we see each other.
And I think that's the lovely thing about, like, true friendships and stuff. And it's such a cliche thing to say, like, you just take off where you left off. But it's so true. And when that happens, like, there's just no awkward pauses and stuff like that, which I kind of expected in this cast. There's not been so far, but we're only about a minute in, so let's see. But yeah, so like, I think the crux of it all, like I say before, is we used to go out, we used to go to uni together, and we was drinking together, weren't we, and stuff?
We was. We drank quite a lot, to be fair.
Yeah, so this is not really to cover much of addiction, but to kind of give a story of how it all started. But yeah, we both went to University of Lincoln, and we was probably going out 4 or 5 times a week or something.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And then we'd have like pre-drinks and stuff like that, and at the time, I wasn't aware fully of being an addict, but I knew that drink made me feel good.
Yeah, see, I didn't even know. I mean, did you suffer from anxiety during uni?
I mean, I can say I've had it since being a kid.
Right.
Like, I can tell you, like, elements or things I've done or how I used to think about things. And now look at it, reflect on it, and know it was anxiety, but at the time I thought it was the norm kind of thing. So when I was at uni, I would suffer from anxiety. I missed a lot of lectures and stuff because of it, but normally it was because I was hungover. Yeah. And obviously when you're hungover, like you'll know yourself, you're so much more anxious and stuff like that.
Oh, definitely.
But I didn't realise I was using drink as a coping mechanism, even though I was 100% aware of it making me feel better.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you try and go on more nights out with us lot because you wanted to escape?
Yeah, 1,000%. But I didn't know it was the drink what was helping me. I just wanted to be out and about and not on my own, which is ironic because over the last year, I'd prefer to be not around anyone.
Yeah.
But back then, I just wanted to be out and about and not alone with my thoughts, whereas this year, I was like happy just drinking alone. And I would say yes to more nights out, but I did like enjoy him for a period of time, but it became like I was doing it quite excessively and drinking quite excessively.
Yeah, I mean, I'd always think if I asked Christian for a night out, he's not saying no.
No.
I'd bank on you going out. Yeah. You were like known as the big drinker in our group.
Yeah, so it's interesting you should say that because I was the big drinker because we always used to do beer bongs and stuff before.
Yeah.
And it was never really a competition, but I was like used to drink the most there. And it's kind of interesting because even though I was suffering at the time and no one like you guys was obviously blissfully unaware of it, to be the biggest drinker in a group of young males is like, and like that's a big thing. It's like you can wear it as kind of a badge of honour.
Yeah.
So I could get away with my alcohol consumption and drink what I wanted because I was perceived as being the biggest drinker, and that was in a sad way, a cool thing to be or do.
No, yeah, I know where you're coming from. Like, when I think of that now, that sounds ridiculous to me now to think that
yeah
we placed you in a like a role of being the big drinker.
Mm.
Of it, like, no one really thought anything of it, did we? It just...
No, it's true. But, I mean, it wasn't forced upon me. It was voluntary as well. So it wasn't like I was put on this pedestal. I was more than happy to, you know, be the big drinker of the group and do it. And, yeah, like I say, like, when I was suffering with it, like, anxiety and stuff, after a few drinks, I did start to feel better. And because, like, that process, though, of university and being the biggest drinker, that's how my tolerance got as high as it did.
Yeah.
But I remember one night, I think we briefly spoke about it before, I think you, a friend of ours called Sol Ash, who I used to live with, who actually does the design work, I went for a shower and everyone was around, and I'd normally be really up for it because it was all going out, and, like, I knew I could get away with drinking. Like, I was at this point, there was never drinking at home, that wasn't a thing. It was just going out. And I remember being really anxious, and I'd literally sat in the shower like a horror film, rocking back and forth, holding my knees, like, really anxious. And I had to drink like a few drinks to, you know, feel a bit normal again. But again, at the time, I just thought that was normal. I didn't think it was anything.
Yeah, so you thought that was like someone just having a hard day and a few drinks would settle them down and then it'd be all right for the night out?
Yeah, exactly that. It's, well, yeah. And how many times do you hear nowadays, well, forever, I think, but where someone goes, yeah, I need a couple of drinks to loosen up, or the old Dutch courage,
yeah,
you know, oh, yeah, I need that to get on the dance floor. Yeah, it's exactly. Sad because you don't, but that's what makes the drug so, you know, powerful. There's so many reasons to justify consuming alcohol.
Yeah, it's so normalised as well.
Yeah, and well advertised and everything like that.
If you turn up somewhere and say, oh, I'm not drinking tonight, it's like you've just said, it's like someone looks at you like you've got three heads. Like,
yeah, it literally is. And it's, it's such a strange one. I do think, I mean, it's obviously you're not a big drinker yourself at all. Like, you used to drink a bit, but you don't go out religiously and stuff like that. And I remember us going to like Leeds not long back, and then you wasn't drinking. A couple of people like questioned it, but you was with me. So since for me, like, it's easier for me, this is what I'm trying to get out, as an alcoholic, as an addict,
yeah,
it's easier for people to understand my process, even though a lot of them are like, oh, well, you could probably have one.
Yeah.
Like you said the other day, like, you wouldn't say to a heroin addict,
oh, you can
have one shot.
Yeah.
So, but it's easier for me. So for people like yourself who don't drink regularly, I think it's like difficult because they don't know you to have a problem as such with alcohol.
No, I mean, why should someone have a reason to be not drinking?
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned when you were hungover that your anxiety spiked.
Yeah.
It was a lot worse. Did you, in the uni days, would you just ride that out, or would you think, I need a drink to get over this?
That's a good question. My anxiety was so bad after a night out, after drinking. It was ridiculous. I would ride it out, yeah. But I'd just lock myself away, like in a room, and I'd try and watch stuff, couldn't really concentrate, tried to sleep. I didn't have any coping mechanism like at that point. I just knew if I could see through like another 12 hours, say, I'd be able to go back out again, because I was going out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Right, so you planned in your head your next night out as you like... Reassurance.
Yeah, and I didn't have to worry about feeling like that. Even though it was really painful, my anxiety was really high, I didn't have to worry because I knew my next fix was coming. But like I said, the difficult thing to explain is that I didn't know it was a fix, I just knew it was feeling better.
Yeah.
But that was the start of, you know, alcohol becoming a massive problem, because I was relying on that later to make me feel like normal again.
Yeah, so if someone asked you at that point, are you addicted to going out on alcohol, you'd have said no.
I'd have said, I probably would have said, maybe agreed to being addicted to going out.
Right.
But that's not a bad thing to say. Like, socialising and that's not really a bad thing. But I wouldn't say I was addicted to alcohol, because I didn't know.
Yeah.
It's only when I started to introduce drinking on my own and in the morning that I realised alcohol may have been a problem. But even then, I wasn't fully aware that it was an issue. So like even when I was drinking at night on my own and stuff, as I poured my glass of whiskey or whatever it was, I didn't see it as being a problem. I'd like treat it as being medicinal, but it was always a problem. So from going back, so when you like going back to what you were saying, would I have been addicted to alcohol? I would have said no then, but looking back now, I'd have definitely have said yes, because that was the start of the slow burner, which just emphasised my addiction and led to where it was like previously.
Yeah, so that's the start of the downward spiral, really.
Yeah.
I think when you're first going into the downward spiral, I don't think you do ever recognise it yourself.
No. And
you can reflect after, like you said, and you know that was the start of it, but during the time, you don't think anything's wrong with what's happening.
No, you don't. And like we spoke at the start, like as you're living it, it's done just not like a flick of a switch. It doesn't just appear or happen.
Yeah.
It is a slow burner, and because you experience it for a period of time and it gets slowly, gradually harder and harder or tougher and tougher, it still normalises it in that process.
Mention the time that you were back at your mum and dad's. This was, how many years ago would this be?
Oh, is this the time you came came around, wasn't it?
Yeah, so me and our other good friend Chris came to see you. We'd heard from, it could have been your mum or dad, that you weren't good.
Yeah.
And this was around the time where we were like going through our quiet spell where we didn't speak that much, obviously, because of, well,
life. Yeah, it's cliche, but life, yeah.
So me and Chris came round and you really weren't good then. You were laid in your bed, weren't you? You weren't getting up out of your bed. You were getting alcohol brought to you by your mum and dad.
Yeah. And what was that? What was I having at that point?
Whiskey.
Yeah.
I just remember whiskey in a, just like a tall tumbler glass, and you get it brought, you wouldn't sip it, you'd just down the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I fully admit that I didn't understand it at all.
No.
And I'd not suffered from anxiety at this point either, and I just wasn't educated on it. I'd not been through it myself. I didn't appreciate how bad it was. I almost thought mental health was something people played on, which sounds horrible, but I'm being honest about it, and that is what I thought about it.
I do think, definitely a lot of people might even go to the point of saying it could be like a get out of jail free card, if you know what I mean, to play that card just to not do stuff or something like that. I'm not saying that you was thinking that, but I think a lot of people do. But you don't really understand it until, like, unfortunately, you've experienced things, or until you know others who experience it. But even then, if you know others, because you've not had it, you don't know what to expect.
You don't know the extent of how powerful it is in your head every day.
No. So I'll quickly point out, this point when I went back home was 2 years ago, and I had a night out, and I had the most severe panic attack I've ever had. And I was just pacing around my house back in Lincoln. Didn't know what to do, didn't know where to go. Just like, I don't know where this fear came from, this anxiety attack. It kind of came out of the blue. And all I knew was I had a bottle of vodka in the house, in the kitchen. And I just poured a pint of it and then just necked it all in one. And then I just passed out on the sofa. And then ultimately, that's when I went home that day. I don't really remember much of the day, but that's when I went home. And I think you probably came a couple of days later.
Right.
But that was the first time I drank excessively to not feel pain, like that, a vast amount, if that makes sense.
That was because the first time you'd done that?
Yeah. Because I had work that day. So I used to drink every night, and used to drink large glasses of whiskey and everything. But that was the first time when, like, my anxiety and my mental health came in between work and everything. I'd still be able to go up, get to work, do that. But I was struggling that much that day that I had to do it. And I didn't care about any repercussions or anything from that. Right. And then I ended up going home. So that's just to, going to, obviously, when I was getting brought whiskey up and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I remember going home and speaking to my mum about it after. And I thought it was a terrible thing that you were getting brought more alcohol.
Hmm.
But obviously, I didn't know. You can't. You obviously have to wean off it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, surely they're just encouraging it. Like, I just completely didn't understand. I wasn't educated on the subject at all.
I do think, though, it's true, but you're not the only one there, mate, to be honest, because you wouldn't think, like, that just stopping or going cold turkey can induce severe withdrawals and like ultimately death.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, while I was sat there with you and you were speaking to us a bit, but you weren't fully there kind of thing.
Oh, that, yeah.
So you were like staring at the ceiling, but acknowledging we were there, talking a bit, but not a lot. And I just wanted to shake you out of it and say, like, go do some exercise and you'll be fine. And like, I just did not understand it. But now I look back and reflect after I've had anxiety and depression as well, and I can fully relate to just how you were feeling.
It's that, and yeah, you're that point you just made about me just staring at the ceiling.
Yeah.
So like, a lot of the time I was fully aware when people was around me, but I just couldn't escape my brain.
Yeah.
And I tricked myself into thinking I could only talk to people if I'd had a drink, because I just thought my mind was rushing so much. The drinking, as it being a sedative, slowed my thoughts down and slowed my panic down, slowed my heart rate down, and it calmed me. So then I could like engage in a conversation. So it wasn't that I was just, you know, drunk staring at the ceiling. I mean, I would have been drunk, but I couldn't concentrate on anything, not even like TV programs, conversations with loved ones. You know, I couldn't concentrate on anything. I think that's something you've experienced later on as well. And that's the worst, like that, because that you just feel completely lost. It's not that you don't have interest, it's that you can't focus.
Yeah, I mean, I watched an episode of This Country at my mum's, laid on her sofa. I was staying there for a few nights because I was bad. And I was watching the episode, but I wasn't watching it. I was just numb.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it.
I couldn't feel anything. I just laid there, like, just completely numb. No, didn't really feel any emotion, nothing. I mean, I love This Country. It makes me laugh every time. I wasn't laughing at all.
No, it's scary, isn't it, that numb feeling? Because you just, you pray for emotion.
Yeah.
And I literally drank, and I can remember when I was drinking, after a couple of drinks, I'd break down crying, and my mum would come up and she'd get upset. And I'd be like, no, mum, don't be upset.
Yeah.
She's like, why? I was like, I'm thankful I can feel emotion again.
Yeah.
Even like if it was drinking juiced or whatever.
Yeah.
I was happy to cry because I felt normal again and like a normal
release,
human.
Nice release, isn't it? I didn't want to eat.
Hmm.
I know that's a big thing in anxiety, and you've had that, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't eat, I didn't shower, I didn't look after myself. And it's all very common themes when going through anxiety or depression. And now I can look back at that and think, okay, it's normal. Whereas at the time, I don't know about, like, for you, like with the eating and the showering and stuff, I was thinking these are everyday things what people do to survive and to live and to function and do. And I just can't get my head around doing it. I just about get out of bed.
Yeah.
Never mind, like, doing just normal chore. And I used to beat myself up about it as well, thinking everyone just goes down for a shower in the morning. I just didn't care.
No.
And it upset me, like, you know, that I'd just lost hope kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's, like, it's a common feeling. I mean, I didn't have a period where I was just bedbound.
No.
But that's only because of my family around me. And my dad's been through something similar, and he had 2 weeks in bed where he just didn't move. And he was the one who, every day, he'd make me get up. He said, get up, have a shower.
Yeah.
Even if that's all you do all day, get out of your bed and have a shower.
I think that's important. It's a difficult one. Like, with him experiencing it, he knows what's, like, worked for him. And being of a relation, I think a similar thing would work for you. And it's good to have that, like, that circle around you to keep pushing you. And like I did as well for me. I think probably what stopped me obviously getting out was just being on the liquor. Like, that's the only thing. Like, I couldn't do day-to-day things. But it's so, like, important to try and keep a routine. But like you said before, you can't get your head around it.
No, I mean, if someone's listening now and they're, there will be people listening, won't there? I mean, they'll come here for help, and they'll be in that state where this might be the only escape they have in a day, is relating to other people going through it.
Yeah.
And my best advice would be is you can take little bits from everyone else, but ultimately you'll find your own way.
Absolutely.
You feel like you don't have that power at the time, though, but you'll get it. And I didn't believe, I thought I'd feel like the pits forever.
No, yeah. yeah, you when you're there, you think that's it, don't you?
Yeah, I thought the rest of my life I'm going to feel exactly like this. But...
yeah. I think, you pulled up a good point again then, and like we spoke about it before, and I in my intentions in the first episode, I think relating to a subject or a topic or whatever is so important.
Yeah.
And it's so, like, and like you say, like even if people listen to this as a form of escapism and then can relate to certain elements, that's huge. Because like you just said before, you can't help but feel alone and feel you're the only person going through that. So to identify with someone else is massive, because you convince yourself, and that's part of the torture as well, you convince yourself not only is your problem's that bad, but you think it's only you feeling like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you can relate to anything, it's absolutely huge. Is there anything like you'd look back on or do differently, or in your approach to coping with it? I mean, you had good people around you, do you know what I mean? But is there anything what you think, oh, I should have?
No. Because I don't think you recognise it until you're in the thick of it.
Yeah.
The first time round.
Absolutely.
Now, if I feel down, which I still do,
yeah,
I'll have a really down few hours maybe, but I'll accept it. I won't look for why.
No.
But to answering the actual question, I don't regret any. I'm actually thankful for the actions I did take, because I acted really quickly.
Yeah, that's huge.
I knew I needed help. I just knew.
And what form of help did you go for? Did you go for therapy? Was it?
First of all, I went to the doctors.
Yeah.
He left me for a couple of weeks to see if it did carry on. Obviously it did.
Yeah.
And then put me on medication, which I'm still on now. I've been on 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after the medication, I went into therapy.
Yeah.
I tried a few different ones. I think it's important to find one that you connect with.
Yeah.
At first I didn't. And I didn't enjoy the sessions, and if anything, they made me worse.
Yeah.
But I kept searching for the right therapist, and thankfully I found a really good one, who I still see now once a month.
That's good. I think that's important as well. It's such a hard thing to grasp and to admit you need to see someone, because I don't know, it just seems like, you like I said, could you build up that it's just you and you shouldn't be worrying about it. It makes it difficult to go see, but as soon as you talk about it, it's better. So it's I did a bit of therapy this year. I did CBT, and that helped a little bit.
Yeah, I think we've said before, the best part of therapy is normalizing your feeling, your thought process, and like when you're in the thick of it, you think that you're the only person, but a therapist has seen hundreds of people like you, and you realize that.
Well, yeah,
you're not alone.
Absolutely. Like when I first started my CBT at the start of this, no, it was June this year, it wasn't the start at all. I was talking about my panic attacks and anxiety episodes and stuff like that. And she just literally had some literature there, which she was reading off, and it was explaining symptoms of panic attacks and stuff. And I can remember just like relating to some of them, thinking, oh, that makes so much sense. I didn't know. I thought it was just me who felt like that. And I've been having these episodes for nearly 12 years now, even longer.
I remember you telling me that, and I was mind blown that you'd not known that.
Yeah,
that was the first time you've been educated on panic attacks.
Yeah, exactly. So it's so important. I think the point we're getting at is it's so important, like if you do feel, you know, if you are suffering with anxiety episodes or panic attacks or depression or anxiety, know that you're not alone. And I'm not enforcing anyone to go see therapy or, you know, have a therapy sessions. It's just, hopefully you can listen to this and relate a bit, but it's so important to educate yourself on it, because you really aren't alone. It's not a battle you have to fight alone. It's not something you just have to bottle up. You can speak with others. And even if it's other sufferers or a therapist, it's such a good idea to do it. And I do wish I'd have gone sooner, but the way I look at it, personally, is that I've needed to go through what I've gone through to come out the other end. And if that involves 9 relapses, 2 seizures, whatever it's involved, it doesn't matter, because it's part of my journey. And I'm grateful now for coming out the other end.
Yeah, I mean, think of, you're going to be helping so many people now.
Yeah.
So without your journey, you wouldn't be in this.
Exactly. Situation. So I caught up with an old friend before, and he kind of broke down to me saying like, oh, I wish I was there. And I was like, I never let anyone know. I said, let's just be grateful. I'm here now.
Yeah.
We're here now. We've got this opportunity. We've got this luxury of this platform to educate others on. So let's not look. Yeah. Let's not look. And then a thing what I always say is like, I'm not sad about the time I've lost. I'm happy about the time I've gained.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So what did you think the day... Did I ring you? No, you rang me. I asked your dad for your number.
Yeah, okay, right.
This was just at the start of lockdown, was it? Or
yeah.
Around that time, wasn't it?
So it was the start of lockdown. And my old man had texted me saying, oh, Johnny Potts wants your number. I'm allowed to give it him. Don't know why he asked that, but anyway, and I was like, yeah, of course, yeah, of course. Shit. Yeah, that's shocking. Yeah, it's like, are you sure? And I said, yeah, of course, yeah. And then you WhatsApped me saying, hey, mate, you're all right. And I just knew instantly. Like, I knew instantly something was going on. So I think I rang you immediately.
Yeah.
And you was at your place of work and you went outside. And I just remember, I was like, you're all right, mate. And you went, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, actually, no, I've had a bit of a bad stint kind of thing.
Yeah, and that initial first sentence of saying it is hard.
Yeah. But
from there, from there we spoke about it a lot, didn't we, over the next few weeks. And
and still to this day.
Yeah, I mean, if we're having a bad day, I know I can, if I'm struggling, I can text you and you'll take the piss out of me for it.
Yeah.
But in as bad as that sounds, us to relate to it by taking the piss out of each other, and it helps.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it massively does. And because then it kind of, you can laugh about it. I mean, I think we both acknowledge if it was really bad, but if we can just, you know, we're not hiding or dodging or evading the problem or the issue. We're talking about it, we're being open about it, and we're addressing it in a comedic manner.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, that won't be for everyone.
No, that won't be, but it works for us. But it's also important to highlight that how us both going through things, how it helps one another, and like talking about it.
Yeah, it's going back to that relating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Relating to the problems. I mean, if you'd took the piss out of me while I was crying in Milan,
yeah,
it wouldn't have gone down well.
No, like, I mean, yeah, that could have been a different story.
Yeah, but now that we're out of the worst of it, if you like.
Yeah, I think it's a constant battle and a constant journey, but you have your ups and downs. But once you find out more about it and, you know, identified not the issues as such, what's like making you feel like that, because a lot of the time you don't need to have something directly, you could just be down. But once you know it's just an emotion, it kind of makes it better. But like we said, we've been back and forth for like the whole time. And before that, we probably hadn't spoken, other than you coming across that time, a couple of years before, we didn't really speak. But like you said, when we did meet, it was fine. Do you think, so this is actually something I've not asked you, but did you contact me because you knew I'd gone through things or was going through things?
Yes. Yeah, it was like a selfish thing from me, really, in a sense that I knew you'd be able to get it.
Yeah.
Because I found talking to people who've been through it, they just get it.
Yeah. I don't think it's selfish at all. You're reaching out for yourself to like help yourself. And like, yeah, and it was nice to hear. And also, to be fair, we probably won't get to it this episode, but you've highlighted a load of things to me which I identify with. So obviously, like, the thing with mental health is there's no quick fix or cure as such. But as you learn about your thoughts and emotions and thought process and stuff, it kind of makes it a little bit easier. But is there anything specifically what you do, you know, maybe on a day-to-day, weekly, to combat, not get rid of the mental, you know, anxiety and stuff, but to help it?
I journal now every day, or as much as possible, I'll journal. And journal's a big help for me.
Yeah.
I've tried meditation. I get on with journaling better personally. I know it helps a lot of people meditating.
Mm.
Exercise is a big part of it for me as well. I know if my anxiety is really bad on a day, I know if I go for a run, it'll settle down after.
That's classic, isn't it? Like release of endorphins.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to rely on a coping mechanism. Like, I try and combat it really by acceptance.
Yeah, not escapism.
Yeah. So accepting rather than rushing to something to escape the feeling.
I mean, yeah, like I used to do with that. Primarily, why I used to drink, obviously.
Yeah, so I mean, I probably learned from you that I don't want to fall into that trap of finding an escape.
Yeah, it's so important that is as well, to acknowledge that emotion rather than trying to escape it. But one thing I will say, like, obviously when you was at your lowest, like when you was not bedridden, but you know, when you was in bed and you just didn't want to be anywhere or do anything.
Yeah.
The thought then of doing a journal or going for a run, you just wouldn't have happened, would it?
No, absolutely not.
And so I just wondered, like, is there anything what anyone else can do in that circumstance or what you did to maybe help?
Yeah, so at that point, I was looking for escapes.
Yeah.
But so it's hard to offer the advice of trying to just combat the feeling, because when it's at its worst, you feel like you can't.
Yeah, no, like you say, numb before, numb.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're going through that now, if you just get through the day, that's a big accomplishment.
Absolutely.
And I had a couple of weeks of that where I'd still go to work, but just getting through a day at work was like a battle.
And an achievement by the end of it. Even though it didn't feel like it probably at the time, it was huge. It was a milestone.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing shameful about admitting that to yourself, that just getting through day-to-day tasks. And you'll probably beat yourself up and think, I've been going to work for 10 years. Why am I feeling like this now? But if you get through the day, you've done very well some days.
Absolutely, that's massive. I think, and you just brought up, like, maybe to a final point there, that for anyone suffering or going for anything, self-acceptance is key there.
Yeah, I think we're both big on that, aren't we?
Yeah, and accept yourself for who they are and how you think and what you do and how you perceive things.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you're alone with yourself for the whole of your life. Like, obviously, there's others around you, but I mean, you're in your head.
Yeah, I've heard a really good thing on YouTube, and I can't remember who said it, but it helped me a lot.
Mm.
And he said people would come to him and say, I want my mind to stop. I can't deal with these thoughts going through my mind. How can I make it stop? And he'd say, the only way your mind stops is if your heart stops, your stomach stops working, you die, basically.
Yeah.
Your mind won't stop, and you have to accept that, and it will become more peaceful in time. But my therapist as well said another good analogy that worked well for me was, if you don't like the thoughts in your head, you kind of just acknowledge them, accept them, and watch them. And he used to say, watch them like fireworks, but don't react to them like a dog does to fireworks.
Yeah, that's good.
And that resonated with me a lot.
I think that's probably a nice little quote to end it on there.
Yeah.
So don't panic.
Yeah, it's like a dog goes absolutely berserk and tries to
just escape. Watch and take it in for what it is.
Yeah, and that links to acceptance, doesn't it?
Yeah, perfect. So that is it for this episode. I hope people have this has managed to help a couple of people relate to certain things. As always, if anyone is suffering, mine and Johnny's, you know, inbox is always open. Feel free to drop us a message or anything like that, and we can talk about it. Like we said before, relation with symptoms and sufferers is massive. But as always, this has been Breaking the Habit. I'm your host, Christian Clark, and I've been joined by Johnny Potts. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, mate.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you for sharing your story. And there'll be definitely one from us coming again soon.
I hope so, yeah. And I mean, I did an Instagram post a bit ago and said, if this helps one person in a day, then it's worth doing. So I reiterated that for this episode.
100%.